friends from present and the past. Every week will be an animated bash. What a cartoon! What a cartoon! Maybe a short but mostly sharp. We'll talk, we'll analyze, exploring as we go. What a cartoon! What a cartoon! What a cartoon!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to What a Cartoon, where baldness is a sign of strength. I'm your host, One Birdman, Bob Mackey. That's right. And this is an audio exploration of every cartoon ever. Who is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and I only want your origin in 20 words or less.
And who else is here? Our special guest who paid for this episode to happen.
Dave Whittington, and please, let me be your disciple.
And today's episode is the One Punch Man episode, The Lone Cyborg. One of our rules is to deafen every guest that comes by, and we did it. We did it, everybody. So, yes, we're doing One Punch Man. I think some of you out there probably don't like the anime stuff we do, but I feel like we're doing a good job so far of doing mainly the crossover hits, and One Punch Man is definitely of the league of My Hero Academia and Big O and Cowboy Bebop, and that there's a lot of Western stuff happening that's not as alienating to people who aren't way into Japanese things in anime.
And also a really mainstream, well, as mainstream as anime hits get in America these days, it was a big hit on Netflix, and
yeah,
people were competing to get it. So I think this, look, I could have picked a way more obscure anime to make people watch, but I think we're going with the popular ones.
Yeah, I mean, every media site has their placeholder, where is One Punch Man Season 2 article that everyone can click on and get no answers. Yeah. But Dave, you're a special guest. You are one of our top tier patrons. You requested this episode. It's another great choice from you. Can you talk about why you like One Punch Man, why you chose this episode, and sort of your history with One Punch Man?
Sure. By the way, flattery will get you everywhere. I do have great taste. So yeah, like Henry mentioned, this was a big crossover hit when it came out. That's how I knew about it. I wasn't like on the ground floor. You know, the last two episodes I picked, we all bragged about how awesome we were that we saw Samurai Jack first or saw Avenger Brothers, blah, blah, blah. Not that with this one. It was hot and everyone online was talking about it. So I'm like, oh, yeah, I should check this out because everyone I follow likes it. It's hard to find someone who says a bad word about this show. It's very, very popular among people who manage to watch it or into anime at all.
Yeah, who I have not like it.
I have not heard anything negative about this show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just that it's more hard to find than anything else. Not even that, you know.
It's on Netflix. It's on Hulu. I think it's on Crunchyroll. Maybe I'm not sure on that one.
Yeah, it's on Crunchyroll as well. It's all over the place. Like it's actually
easy to find.
Yeah, that licensing deal is tough. Like, yeah, it's really widespread.
The reason why I picked this episode was in part because you were foolish enough to break the seal on anime on this show. Last time I was on here, you hadn't done an anime episode yet.
It's true.
But yeah, this is just a really, really good show. It's hard to talk about in broad terms because it's sort of a parody of Shonen Jump stuff, but also kind of played straight as well at times. Mm-hmm. It functions as a straight show. Like, if you have no idea that there's sort of some subversive elements in it, it still works as a action show with just kind of goofy villains.
It really does. In fact, we just recorded an episode on The Tick not too long ago, and this really reminds me a lot of The Tick in that it is the craziness of superheroes mixed with the mundanity of having to live in a regular world and how those two interact with each other.
And questioning how wild it would be to live in that world, too.
Or inconvenient.
inconvenient. It's frustrating is a good word for it. Life is cheap in the world of One Punch Man.
I guess the broad strokes of the story is it's about a character named Saitama. In order to become strong, he followed this very simple regimen of just working out a lot, and he became the strongest man on Earth. And I like how his origin story is just like, no, I just worked out a lot. But it did make him bald. But because he worked out so much, he can basically destroy any villain with one punch, hence One Punch Man. And you think they can't get a lot out of that premise, you're wrong. And that's why I love this show. It's just like, well, what else can he do? Like, what else can happen in this show? They get a lot of mileage out of One Punch Man.
Yeah, and Saitama's origin is actually covered in episode 1, which is what we're not covering, technically. I chose episode 2 in part because it has Genos introduced, and I think he's a major, major part of what makes the show work.
Oh, yeah, he's a great foil for Saitama.
Exactly. And so episode 1 does cover, like I said, it covers that he does, how he came to be. He fights a crab dude as his first real, I guess, his real villain fight.
He saves a little kid with a butt chin.
One thing, that's one thing I do like also at One Punch Man is just how over the top it can be, though, because like the origins of the crab guy he fights was that he ate too much crab and then became a giant crab. person villain. Like that's kind of the origin of a lot of villains in or even heroes too in the One Punch universe, is that they ate too much this or did too much that, and now they're just this.
Or some guy just rides a bicycle.
Yeah.
without a license.
he somehow made it into one of the higher tiers of superhero. But yeah, One Punch Man is a lot like the Tick. So while the Tick is the only character who takes the superhero thing seriously, in this show, One Punch Man is the only one who doesn't take it seriously. Yes. He's just like, I just want to go shopping. I don't crash through my apartment. I want to play video games. I want to eat ramen. Leave me alone.
He's surrounded by people who take it all so seriously and give him very long monologues that he's just like, God damn it, shut up.
Yeah. Like, and a lot of the show is like, what is the bureaucracy of superheroes like? What is the hierarchy of superheroes like? Superheroes do not like this guy for the most part. The other heroes don't like him because he came from nowhere and he's super powerful.
He's unpolished and he's uninterested in fame. Like all these people who are used to being the strongest, they thought they were the strongest. Now they keep meeting a guy who's way stronger than them, who isn't full of himself and feels nothing.
And I really like his super realistic, shitty Japanese apartment where it's basically yeah. just like a closet. Mm-hmm. Like literally a hole in the wall.
Yeah, most of his downtime is spent reading manga. He freaks out about missing the bargain sale because I guess he doesn't get paid much.
Yeah, one of the major plot points in the first episode is there's like a sale on like a vegetable or something like that, yeah. or like leeks are on sale or some very tiny sale that he misses because he had to fight a villain. And it really pisses him off.
Well, in the opening, they have that great shot of him walking with his like little bag from the convenience store, taking home dinner that yeah. he's going to make himself, and that he just has in so many episodes. You see him with like. Regular teacups or just like it's so mundane. He's like Arthur in the world of the Tick, the most mundane person, except he's the strongest of them all.
Yeah, his life is so unglamorous. Like he's, you know, in the way that Superman's almost invincible to some people, at least, or for some villains, like he's that invincible. But yeah, he doesn't have a cool costume. His costume is like yellow and red. Like it's really ugly yellow.
It's baggy too. It doesn't really fit him very well.
He doesn't look good.
Yeah, he does not look cool at all. That's where Genos is a great foil, because Genos is everything that Saitama is not. Like Genos is super cool. He's got the tragic backstory of his village being destroyed by an evil cyborg or something.
And cool hair.
Yeah, he has
all
these cool moves. And he also gets his shit wrecked all the time, which Saitama always wins. There's also even that opposite effect.
Yeah.
Because Saitama is incredibly effective for a guy who just has no skills. Like he's not a martial artist or anything. Even his training, like you mentioned, is mundane. Like, it'd be kind of strenuous if, like, you know, an out-of-shape guy like me tried to do it, but it's
like,
well, within, like, an Olympic athlete would find that to be nothing.
Like, run 10 kilometers, do 100 sit-ups,
yeah,
do 100 push-ups.
Yeah.
Don't run
air conditioning.
Yeah, and on the third, in the third episode, when he says that Origin, like, Geno says, quit lying to me. Like, that's not even that strenuous of a strength exercise.
Like, that's like if you work at it, that's attainable for pretty much any person, really.
Yeah.
If you worked up to it.
I think it's it's setting a good imitatable act for anime nerds to follow.
We'd all be better off if we did that.
Yes, but I will have to have the air conditioning on.
Yeah, I'm not turning that off.
Yeah, it's right down in California.
Let's talk about the history of One Punch Man, folks. It's pretty damn interesting. So this is like an adaptation of an adaptation. So let's get into that. So this anime series ran for 12 episodes from October 4th, 2015 to December 21st, 2015. And there are 6 OVAs that I have never seen, and they're only available on the physical release.
Really? Oh, I've watched those, actually.
And how long are they?
They're like 10 or 15 minutes.
Okay.
10 minutes, actually, I would say. It's been a while since I've seen them, so my apologies for the fuzzy memory. But wow. Yeah, they're just like one little vignettes. They're usually kind of goofy. Like they all eat together, and then they thought someone was killed, and it turns out it's Zombie Man who can't die. Like
okay.
It's all kind of like short little goofy stuff.
Is the animation like up to par with the series, or are they more like goofy, super stylized, like chibi?
It's to the series animation.
Okay.
It's probably not quite as good as like the best fight scenes, whatever, but it's fine.
Yeah.
Like it's pretty standard.
I do want to get around to watching those, but I've never seen them. But I guess they're not that important. But
I pirated them. So, you know, they're kind of hard to get a hold of legally.
You can pirate anime? Wow. I'm learning so much. So the really fun origin story of One Punch Man is that it started in 2009 and is still ongoing as a webcomic by an artist known as One. I don't have any insight into the world of Japanese webcomics, but I'm sure there's so much cool stuff going on that we don't know about based on just how big this is and was.
But it's drawn by a guy who's not like a great artist.
No.
Like, it looks a little amateurish, the originals.
I would say if you go back, so the more modern One Punch Man's done by One, they look like a high schooler did them. if you go back to the beginning, it's like you in middle school did them in MS Paint. That's what they look like. And that's not an insult. That's part of the charm of this comic.
He actually does draw them a little crappily intentionally. Like, yeah. There have been times where he's drawn other stuff that, again, it's not up to like Murata's level, which we'll get into in a second, I'm sure. But he actually can draw better than that, and it is a bit intentional. They draw it kind of childishly.
Yeah, his other manga or his other webcomic, Mob Psycho 100, which is also another really good anime, yeah. The art is much better in that, and one does draw the art for that. Sorry, yeah.
No, I was saying that's what I love about the Saitama's design, that no matter who draws him or if he's animated or on the page, he still is so hyper-simplified most of the time, but then other times if they want to draw extreme detail on him, they'll do that too.
Yeah, when things get serious. Yes. But he usually has that like blank, wide-eyed expression.
Yeah, very, very circular face, like almost a perfect oval.
Yeah, it's great. So I don't think the webcomic has an official release or official translation. It was actually kind of hard to find outside of Google image search and like One Punch Man message boards where someone would be like, oh, here's the latest chapter I translated. But it's kind of unnecessary because we'll get into it. But the manga done by Murata, Yusuke Murata, is like an HD remake of the webcomic. It's him using his amazing artistic skills to make it into a real action manga without changing the story or really the layouts or anything like that. It's just sort of making it very, very pretty.
That's an amazing idea that the one of the greatest artists in Japan taking a silly little webcomic and turning it into a great action comedy, still keeping all the comedic bits, but now when One Punch Man punches somebody and their head explodes, you see it in amazing detail.
Oh, God, yeah.
I was trying to think of like an American equivalent to that, and I just like, it's like, imagine you were drawing some little webcomic and then Jim Lee contacts you on Twitter. It's like, hey, let's do this together for Marvel. You know, that's kind of what happened here.
It's like Todd McFarlane doing the Control-Alt-Delete series. I pulled the two worst things from my memory, by the way. I'm sorry.
Those are both good. That's good.
I know, but not Control-Alt-Delete. Come on.
but yeah, Murata actually contacted him over Twitter and asked one, like, hey, do you want, you know, let's do this, you know, we can redraw this for, I think it's actually Weekly Shonen Jump Young or something, or Young Jump.
Yeah, I think it's called, so yes, it is actually, so we'll get into who Yusuke Murata is in a second, okay. But he did it for, and he's still, it's ongoing, 17 volumes ongoing, for the digital version of Weekly Young Jump, which is the brand of Jump that is for like older readers, like adult readers, more sophisticated or horny readers.
So it's young in English then? Because shonen means young. Young boy.
Yeah, it's called Weekly Young Jump.
Okay.
But wow. I don't know why it's for older people. I didn't name it.
Hey, you know, borrowed words. This is how it goes.
Yes. But let's get into Yusuke Murata because he has in recent years become one of my favorite mangakas or manga artists. So born in 1978, if you don't think you've seen his art before, you might have in the early 90s, because as a young boy at the age of, I don't know, in his tweens, he won two Capcom contests to create Mega Man villains.
Whoa.
So in Mega Man 4, he is the creator of Dustman. And thinking about how stupid Dustman is, I can only think about, like, I can see that sense of humor in his manga.
That's amazing. That was something I learned from Bakuman, that manga, how much they depend on contests. Like,
yes.
Like, technically, Dragon Quest exists because of a contest Square Enix did for, like, hey, pitch us a game. We'll make it.
It might have been a Shonen Jump contest itself, maybe. I forget.
I would bet. Yeah. I would bet.
But he also designed Crystal Man for Mega Man 5. So he has designed two robot bosses you probably have fought in your life if you're 30 or older. So he debuted in Shonen Jump in 1995 at the age of 17 with a one-shot titled Partner. But his first big hit, which is also an anime, was the American football comedy sports manga Ice Shield 21, which is actually very good. I don't give a shit about football, but I've read some of it and I've watched more of the anime way back in the day, but I got into it.
Check that out.
It is not only the fun of a sports manga, and you know how they go. You know all the tropes, but it's also like, it is also meant to explain football to like a layman.
Right.
And that's me. Yeah. Even though I'm an American, I don't know how football is played, but it's like they're pointing out why all these things are significant that I never think about. But of course, people have superpowers. There are demons. It's great.
And a minor bit of trivia, I guess, is that Ishield 21 was actually offered to Richiro Nagaki, and then he didn't feel confident enough to illustrate it, so that's where Murata got brought in.
Yes,
Murata is actually the writer, and then... Murata's credited as the illustrator.
Okay, I wasn't sure what the author had done before, but yeah, Murata is the illustrator, not the writer for the comic. I think he's mainly into illustration more than writing.
Well, that's kind of different in the manga world compared to American comics, because American comics it's way more rare to have a writer-artist. It's more of a writer and artist pairing, and in Japan, it's the opposite. Mostly, it is one artist who writes and draws everything there are like some standouts, and this is one of them, of a guy who he'll just draw what you tell him to draw.
Yeah, and Bakemon actually opened my eyes to that, and I assume that the writer of a manga was just writing words down and saying, in this panel, do this. But if you read Bakemon, they have the storyboard versions of the comic, and it's the writer doing a rough version that the artist will later do as a full comic. So they're doing all the layouts and stuff just in a very rough way, not on the professional level of a professional artist. So that might just be for that team, but I have to feel like it's probably more, that's more of a formula there.
Not to delve too much into like manga creation, but yeah, there's actually a whole team that does, because they pump out 20 pages a week. So it's, so when Oda draws One Piece, for example, it's, you know, he does do like the big time, you know, prime time drawings, but he has a bunch of assistants who draw backgrounds.
Yeah, he's mainly into the characters and that sort of action. Yeah. But
ink in all the blacks for black and white, the black coloring, I should say, not in case that sounded weird when I said it.
But yeah, they always go uncredited, because I think it's a really like earn your dues kind of thing in the manga world. But there are so many, like Oda, the One Piece guy, he was busting his balls on like Rurouni Kenshin and things like that. Only later you would find that out.
Well, and the Naruto Boruto was taken over by the longtime assistant of the Naruto artist.
That's great. I'm glad they get chances like that.
Finally. But it's a real senpai kohai type situation. Yeah, feels there. Like it,
yeah. I hope they get paid well, but who knows. But so Murata, I'm excited about this. He's also going to be doing the Back to the Future manga.
Yeah,
if you Google it, there's one piece of key art. It is amazing. He is such a great artist. And I recommend, if you want to look at his art, go online on Google Image Search and search for Yusuke Murata Shonen Jump Anniversary. He did this amazing like poster image of like every Shonen Jump character all together in like one amazing scene. You can also search for his name in Mega Man. You can see like this amazing tableau of like every robot villain in Mega Man. And I think the key facet of his art is that it's extremely meticulous without being lifeless. Like, his fight scenes are so great and there is so much detail, but he does not lose the action in his drawings. Okay. And that's why I think the anime is so great, in that they spent the money to capture just how well the fight scenes are. In fact, the last episode of the anime is almost all action, and those chapters of the manga are him showing off. Like, every page is a two-page splash page of this fight that's happening. It goes by in like a minute, but it's like, this is all amazing art. I can't believe it.
When I finally got around to watching this, I couldn't believe how well animated it was, because I'm used to good television animation, like My Hero Academia, which is, I watch that weekly. I love that show. And it is at a really good level of televised animation, but there's still some parts where like, oh, they save money here, they move stuff here. But like, this is like OVA quality in a lot of cases animation.
And My Hero, by the way, is actually probably a higher standard than most normal.
Way higher.
But One Punch Man is animated by Madhouse, which is pretty well known, I think, at least personally, it's well known for two things: having really good animation quality and not doing a lot of second seasons.
That's true.
It
yeah.
is true.
They just are choosy about what they want to do. Like, well, we just broke our backs on 12 episodes of this thing. Let's do another 12 episodes of something else.
They have a lot of really high tier prestige stuff, but also a lot of crap. But one last
the
thing
crap
about
pays the bills.
one last tiny thing about Yusuke Murata before we move on to Madhouse is that everybody follow him on Twitter at Nebu_Kuro, Nebu_Kuro. He posts so many original sketches. He posts a lot of like works in progress. Warning, he's a very horny dude. He loves drawing breasts, and I have to say, he's very good at drawing realistic breasts. A lot of manga guys can't do it right, but he has studied the breast, everybody.
Well, the Ghost in the Shell guy, he draws two like slippery banana breasts. Oh, this is weird.
It's not right. Learn your anatomy, everybody. If you're going to draw boobs, get it right. But Madhouse, let's talk about Madhouse. So I did some research on Madhouse. I've enjoyed a lot of their shows, but I never really dug too deep into where they started. And they started back in 1972. They branched off from Mushi Pro, which was Tezuka's animation studio. Osamu Tezuka, you know, Astro Boy and all that stuff. like the godfather of manga. That was his animation studio who was making, you know, adaptations of his work.
Wow. And so I didn't know Madhouse had been around that long. Madhouse, I think, was the first studio I learned the name of anime studios, because
it has a cool name.
Yeah, but it was, I think it was in some review, they said of, I believe it was Paprika. They're just like, oh, this was the Ninja Scroll people, Madhouse. Or no, it was Animatrix, because they did thing on Animatrix. Yeah. They're like, the Madhouse things in Animatrix. I was Madhouse. Oh, they did Ninja Scroll? They did everything I like? Wow.
Yeah, you might have seen their stuff like, of course, Trigun, Cardcaptor Sakura, and everything Satoshi Kon did.
Yeah.
So he was a Madhouse guy, and then he was allowed to make his own movies. So he worked up the chain, I guess, there.
Yeah, his Paranoia Agent is one of their best TV show things. Though there are, you can definitely tell there's some weaker episodes, just like budget wise, in Paranoia Agent. Which that's not fair to it, because it's getting compared to all the other Satoshi Kon films, which have film budgets. So yeah, there's no real comparison.
Yeah,
but
Paranoia Agent, even though it was a prestige show, was kind of a niche show too. Yes. It was not like One Punch Man or, you know, One Piece or whatever.
Is that the one that's only six episodes?
So no, it's 13. It's the usual 13. Okay. It's basically a bunch of short stories with an overarching thing.
Fuzzy on it.
But though Ninja Scroll was the first Madhouse thing I ever watched, that was, it's a ton of white dudes, that's their first anime.
I still have never seen Ninja Scroll.
Really?
Can you believe that?
Honestly,
it's just like what you're talking about with Madhouse. It's super well animated, but it's not really like a good story.
A lot of rape in that movie.
No, it's, yes.
There's also that.
True,
which is why I won't be revisiting it.
No, but.
Or visiting it, rather.
But when I first watched it, and you'd never seen anything like it before.
Oh, I've seen the clips, yeah.
Like the bamboo fight with a blind guy, which now that I've watched enough anime, I know that that's kind of like a very tropey thing of just the blind fight. But it wasn't a cliche to me when I saw it for the first time, like 96. Or 97. But anyway, yeah, and they also did Samurai Champloo, which is another of my favorite like animation ones, the Watanabe show he did after Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah, go online and just see what they've done, and if you're into anime, you probably watch like, I don't know, 10 of their series or 15, but the director for the series One Punch Man, who will not be doing the second season for reasons I don't know why, Shingo Natsume, he is pretty new. I looked at his credits. His highest profile thing before series director on One Punch Man was series director on Space Dandy, which is a show I do want to see. It's another Watanabe show, along with Champloo and Bebop, right? It's a Watanabe show?
Yeah, it is. It's a wackier show than
I haven't seen
Bebop.
It, but my impression is it's sort of like Cowboy Bebop, but parody, but like joke.
Yeah.
It's sillier.
There's another show of his I really need to see. It's like, it's the two women's names.
Oh,
Michiko and something or other.
Yeah. Oh, Sachiko Minin.
Yes.
Something like that.
Anyway, don't correct me online, please.
Yes.
I know what it is, and it's on my Crunchyroll queue, but I watched the first episode, like, this is so good, so I need to catch up on my Watanabe.
By the time you comment, you'll have looked it up. Don't worry.
Exactly. I'm going to look it up when I get home. The joke's on you, everybody. But yeah, everyone wants to know where season two is. And supposedly, it's been in the works since 2016 with a new series director, but there's no news on a release date yet. But I have to say, I did some research, and on August 12th, there is an event in Japan, a One Punch Man event in Japan, and it's believed that the premiere date will be announced on August 12th, which will be, I believe, before you hear this episode, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, I went through a similar thing with JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, too, of the long wait that they finished a season three in 2016 of part four comic. And for 2 years, there was just no word on if they were ever going to do part five. And like, so is it canceled? Is there a new season? What's up? And they finally had like a JoJo event where they were showing off like special museum pieces that the artist did. And he's like, well, hey, since we're doing a JoJo event, may as well show you the trailer. And boom, and they announced part five. So
by the time you hear this, you'll probably know if there will be a season two and when it will be. But
this is a bit of a tangent, but one thing that's a little weird as an American is that when something's hot, they just run it right into the ground immediately. Like, here in America, but in Japan, they're like, oh, we might do a second season eventually. Don't worry about it. We'll tell you eventually. Yeah. And it's weird because Attack on Titan was huge.
I was thinking of Attack on Titan.
Yeah. And people were desperate. Like, when's the second season? They're like, maybe we'll tell you at some point.
But I really recommend the anime is pretty faithful to the manga. But of course, there's only so much anime. But the manga is really good. Again, Murata is such a great illustrator. It's worth it just for his art alone. But I've read up to volume 12, I believe. Dave, you're all the way caught up.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the number is, but yeah,
17 is the latest one in Japan. We could be like at 16 or something now.
Well, also, if you have the Shonen Jump subscription from Viz, they actually will insert occasional chapters from One Punch Man.
Oh, cool.
Even though it's not technically Shonen Jump, but they put it in there.
As a consumer, I am so used to in America, just like when a new thing hits, when Rick and Morty hit, they're like, we will make every Rick and Morty thing we can, and we're going to produce this as fast as we can. But oppositely with My Hero Academia, when I went to Tokyo in January, I still was like, I'm going to all the stores to buy junk in Akihabara, and I still can't find any like toys for My Hero. What the fuck?
I went in May, and there were no My Hero stuff anywhere. It was all like nostalgia. It was all nostalgia stuff.
But it's so merchandisable. Yeah. MHA is our Boku no here. You know what? It says My Hero at the top of My Hero. People. It says
it's Boku no.
No, it's MHA. That's what it is.
My Hero Academia.
Yeah, so One Punch Man's gone through the same thing. If you're on the message board, people are freaked out about season two ever since season one ended. And yeah, they're just like, hey, well, we'll tell you. I guess maybe August 12th. But yeah, like, again, it's just different for me as an American. I guess they're not that worried about it until they want to tell you.
There's so much stuff I can't wait to see in the manga that I hope they adapt. There's this one hero who just has the misfortune of showing up whenever a monster is killed, so people think he did it, but he's really just this loser gamer. And it's all about like Japanese, like old school gaming culture. He plays Super Famicom, he's way into RPGs. Like, it's really fun. It's really,
yeah,
really
I don't
fun.
I don't want to spoil that too much. I didn't want to add on too much more, but yeah, it's a really great little mini arc they have. And it happens like right after where the anime ended.
Yeah,
so they should adapt.
I really hope that comes next. But yes, let's get into the episode, The Lone Cyborg. So we are not going to be doing any clips for this episode. It'll just be like Kill la Kill. It's a very action-focused show, and I did not have access to the dub because I believe it could possibly be exclusive to Cartoon Network or the
Adult
DVDs
Swim
or something like that, but it's not on any of the streaming services. But, I mean, if you're an anime fan, you're used to watching subtitles, and the sub is fine, so... Mm-hmm. There's no complaints there.
Something I didn't know until I looked up the trivia on this was one of the fun things in the Japanese dub is that they got tons of seiru who are famous in other characters to play it. Like in the third episode when he fights the giant Kabuto guy, he's the voice from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure of Joseph Joestar the Elder. And same with the villain Hammerhead in the fourth episode is the voice of Okuyasu on JoJo's Bizarre Adventure 2, and they have a lot of fun casting like that. Especially, and another thing I didn't notice until I looked up the trivia is that like how Saitama is designed really to look like Anpaman.
Yeah, I was gonna mention that. Yeah, was that ever confirmed by someone, like by One actually? Because I'm not sure if that's just like a coincidence. People know, not a coincidence.
Well, they call him Wanpon Man in Japan too.
It's both a visual pun and a literal pun. Like, yes, so yeah. Anpon Man and Wanpon Man.
But Anpon Man is, did you want to?
Well, I mean, I am not an Anpon Man expert. But even speaking of merchandise in Japan, he's still everywhere. Like, he is still a beloved children's comic strip.
He's anthropomorphic bread?
He's a bread head.
Okay.
Like,
everyone thought so.
It's like a red bean paste, I think is what they describe it as, right? Isn't it like kind of like a pastry almost?
Bread in Japan is, if I may
it's
say...
It's good.
It's amazing. But they treat it more as a dessert type thing because it's a borrowed... Bread in general is a borrowed thing there. Like, so this is me. I'm an expert in Japan. I've been there five times. They treat bread so well. One of the funniest things they do with like pancakes is they rightly say like, no, pancakes are dessert. You don't eat a pancake for breakfast. Like we only make dessert pancakes.
They realize bread is a privilege, not a right.
Yes, yeah. And so anpanman is similar. I mean, pan. That's actually at least the word pan, which is used one of the uses for bread. There, it's a borrowed word from Spanish. That's the Spanish word for bread as well. P-A-N.
Yeah, I pulled up an image of anpanman. That's One Punch Man. It's definitely One Punch Man, except not made of bread. So yeah, if you're at home, Google anpanman.
And he has like a melon bread friend, and everybody's like they're all food people. It's a really cute show. So when you see a picture of anpanman next to One Punch Man, you're like, yeah, this is. They're the same guy.
That just came up in Google image search. So there you go.
Well, and also, since we're on that kind of trivia, one grew up in a prefecture called Saitama. So where the name came from.
I know people who live in Saitama or had talked about on the 8-4 podcast, the guy talked about living in Saitama. It sounds like a nice, like, kind of just suburban prefecture. Like, actually, probably pretty similar to City Z when it's not being torn to pieces.
I mean, I'm not an expert on the Japanese side of things, but it kind of feels like naming your superhero, like, Mississippi or something, right? Like,
Yeah. I have to wonder, there probably is there's a pun behind every Japanese name that we will never understand unless someone sits us down to explain it. So I have to wonder, is there a pun here? Who knows?
Oh, I mean, show is full of puns, that's for sure. And in the casting, like I read that in the dub, they even have some similar casting jokes too, where, for example, the voice of...
Well, it's Christopher Sabat who does like Vegeta. I think he also does Piccolo. He voices the first guy in the very first episode that looks kind of like Piccolo.
Yeah, the Piccolo voice is voiced by Piccolo in the first episode.
That's great.
English. Yeah.
But this episode starts, again, a mix of the mundane and the fantastic. One Punch Man is in his hot apartment. He's watching the news. And they're talking about a mysterious outbreak of a new kind of mosquito. But Saitama is more interested in watering his cactus, which I don't know if it's proper cactus care to water it.
I actually missed that joke on my initial viewing of this way back when. But on the newscast, they bring on in a mosquito expert, and they're like, "Well, what can you tell us about?" "Well, it's actually a brand new species, so I know nothing." They're like, "Get out of here!
Get out of here! I'm sorry."
Yeah,
and he has
the shitty expert.
Just the mundanity of his apartment, including his like just cutesy child watering can of an elephant. It's so adorable.
Like Saitama was meant to be, he's very much portrayed as an average Joe type of guy, like outside of being an invincible superhero, like his personality, how he acts, he's not particularly dumb necessarily, he's just very average Joe to me, like just the average schmo guy who doesn't get all the hubbubs about kind of thing.
But he can't kill a mosquito, though. Yeah.
No, this mosquito is resisting all of his attacks, and he's like phasing around on his porch trying to kill the mosquito, so we can tell something bad is happening, and as that happens, we see this mysterious cyborg peering out over the city, and there's a mysterious cloud of mosquitoes, and he said, here's the next target, or something like that.
Target acquired.
Yeah, and then we have One Punch!
So that let's talk about that opening. It's amazing looking.
Yes, it is so cool. It actually reminds me a lot of the My Hero Academia opening.
Yeah, or at least the first season one.
The only disappointing thing about it is that I don't think he actually fights any of the people he blows up.
No, they make up original. My favorite is the one that the Super Mario star that gets shattered.
I was thinking of that one too. Yeah,
just all these characters he kills, and you get to see too. Just like when One Punch Man punches somebody, they explode into blood and guts. Like it's such a violent show in hilarious ways.
The fun gore is great. It's so over the top that it's not gross.
And the opening is this tribute to 80s hair metal too. Wanna be Sahiro.
it's done by Jam Project, who have done a ton of anime openings. In fact, Jam stands for Japan Animation Song Makers.
Oh.
Yes. So if you look them up, they've done a ton of your favorite anime openings.
Wow. And I like the opening even more when it's against the endings theme, which is the most like average ending theme.
It's
of
out of place. It's like kind of melancholy.
Yeah. When that ending thing pops up, I'm like, some pop idol has a deal with this network. That's what explains this.
Well, it's like the visual is like a was like rain against a window. I think. Yeah. Well, like, what is happening?
That's why it feels like a joke to me, a parody of what every shonen show has an ending theme of, like, hey, this is the cool down ending theme. The show's over. Let's chill out.
My favorite one of those is the end of Dragon Ball, the original series, where it's like suddenly it's a show about Bulma being contemplative. And she's like looking out window and drinking tea, and it's now the Bulma show.
Yeah, very very representative of the real show for sure.
Yeah. Way different than the opening, but yes. So we continue. The city is being evacuated due to threat level demon, and there are many threat levels in City Z, and I forget all of them. But there's always like a new classification depending on what the danger level is in the city.
So I think it's because I think I remember. So I think it's demon. There's wolf,
like Oni, maybe Oni is demon.
Yeah, it is. And then there's dragon, and there's god. So it's meant to be like loss of life, loss of a city, loss of multiple cities, and then extinction level.
I wonder if this is a parody of our own terrorist warning levels
in
America.
I think it's of that idea. Yeah. I'm sure it's not unique to us.
I also like the humorous laziness of, like, well, this is City Z. They go to City F in another episode. It's like, let's not name them. It's like, again, like the Tick. In the Tick, they operate in the city. So.
I think maybe Dave can help me out with this. Aren't the cities named so generically because they just get destroyed so often? So it's like, let's not get attached to the names of these places.
That might be why, but I don't remember if they say that explicitly.
I forget.
But they're definitely just called cities A through Z. Like, they don't have
names. It is hell to live in these cities. Like, it's just every day. It's like, well, another giant monster. Like, in the first episode, 8 giant monsters show up at different times and just kill everyone.
It's amazing to see how many monsters will show up every time there needs to be some action. In this episode, there's what, like, 7 monsters?
There's quite a lot. Yeah. It's kind of almost wasteful, but that's what I love about it, too, that they... Many of the villains could be multiple arc villains in a lesser show, like the Mosquito Queen they fight in this one. It's like, she's a full episode villain and she's half the episode.
Yeah, I do like how, again, you go into the show thinking, what can you do with this premise? And every time you think this is going to be the next arc, no, that person's dead already. I like how they constantly defeat your expectations. The city's being evacuated. One petty thug sticks around to rob all the places. That's when we see the sexy mosquito girl. And believe me, there's a lot more detail on her nipples in the manga, everybody. Okay.
they're still pretty horny in the anime, too.
Yeah, this is a very horny character. I don't want to overplay how horny Barada is, by the way. There are a few characters where it's like, I want to read this manga in public, but I'm not going to read this half of this book about this S&M villain that you're drawing just to draw a woman in tight leather.
I mean, Ron has the excuse, at least, that, you know, he didn't come up with it.
That is true.
He came up with it. He just stylized it.
They're not bad. They're just drawn that way.
I love all the lines from the mosquito villainess, too, that she's saying, just like, fill me with your juices.
Again.
Very euphemistic.
He's being cheeky. He knows this character is over-sexualized. I'm not trying to overplay this. I think it's funny. But this could be so surprising to you walking into this episode.
Well, she's a parody of the many sexy villainesses that are in both American and Japanese comics. So, and she's even cast by a woman who's played many of those types of characters.
Yeah, her voice actress is great. And so she sends her cloud of mosquitoes down upon this villain, or this petty thug, rather, and basically sucks them dry. And then you learn...
sucks them dry.
The mosquitoes steal blood from people and living things, and they give the blood to her, and it fills her big blood sack. Which is more sexual imagery
right above her butt.
yeah
it's a very quick way to show like what the danger is, which is funny because, again, like you mentioned, like it seems like the core thing seems like the sort of villain it could be, like a multi-episode villain.
Yeah,
and she's not.
Yeah.
And the level of madhouse, the level of detail of the guy's eyes deflating like balloons as he sucked it dry.
I'm happy they cut away before his eyes just like disappeared. It was
a little gross, actually. Yeah, with the
And that's when Genos shows up, or Genosis.
It's Genos.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would say Genos.
the fire animation on him is amazing.
Yeah. He blows up her cloud of insects with fire, because he's got all these like cool like guns in his hands. And then he starts like bouncing off of buildings. Mm-hmm. Very, very visual show. If only you could see it, folks. If only you could see it. But the fight scenes are so fast-paced and so well-animated with none of the shortcuts you would associate with anime in terms of fighting scenes.
Yeah, there's no like charging up like the traditional Dragon Ball stereotype.
Or like sliding characters across the screen slowly.
Or just a bunch of speed lines.
Yeah.
It's so truncated, all these fights. You don't have the moment where she tears off his arm and he tears off her leg. That could have been built to for like 20 minutes, but they just do it almost instantly.
Yeah, I really appreciate the fast pace of the show as while we're on that. Yeah, because it moves through things very quickly. It never feels like it's lagging or taking its time on anything. It's like it's just keep going.
And the animation on the Mosquito Queen, too, is so good when she has such unrealistic proportions. She has the body of a woman up to her arms and legs, and then the arms and legs are bug arms that move and extend in ways that normal bodies don't move. And yet they just keep – it's all so realistic the way they fight. It's all – or at least believable. I don't want to say realistic.
Yeah, it's fair. I've seen mosquito women in real life. So Saitama appears. He is chasing that same mosquito while spraying it with bug spray. It's getting in his mouth. And that's how he arrives on the scene in a very funny way.
All his genos is getting torn apart, which – That happens to him almost every episode.
Yeah, I was gonna say he gets his shit wrecked a lot. He's kind of like the Vegeta of the show in that way. His job is to like appear powerful and then get defeated, and then Saitama comes along and actually.
I mean, that's even more Piccolo, really. I'd say. Though what he reminds me of in an American comics way is superheroes who are robots on, say, Avengers or Justice League, like Red Tornado or Vision. So in a comic, you can only do so much physical damage to, say, Captain America before you say, well, his arm will never... He lost his arm. That wouldn't happen. But with guys like Vision or Red Tornado, they get torn to pieces all the time to show the stakes.
Before he's torn up, though, I did want to point out that... So the Mosquito Queen releases, like, basically a tsunami of mosquitoes that just... like rush throughout the entire city, and then Genos is like, okay, no one is here, I can blow them all up. So he blows them all up with like 1,000 explosions, and they're all animated.
Yes.
Like imagine a tsunami of mosquitoes being blown up by 1,000 explosions in a city. So he basically destroys the city.
That just roasts the city alive. It's like, well, he didn't kill anybody, but this is impossible property damage.
Well, it's funny that as a super intelligent cyborg, he immediately forgot about Saitama, who he saw like 10 seconds before he blew up the entire city. So from his point of view, he must have been like, I mean, yes, he says it in the episode, but it's also like, you forgot about that guy already? You just saw him.
It only burns his clothes off.
Yeah.
He doesn't, apparently working out makes you impervious to explosions, too.
He's invincible. Like, he's unkillable.
But, you know, Genos didn't know he was invincible at the time. You know?
No, Genos just
that's
killed
the guy he almost killed.
He knew,
So this is when the Mosquito Queen shows up again. Mosquito Girl, rather. And she is now, like, her version of Super Saiyan. She's, like, Blood Saiyan. She's blood red. And this is when she is tearing Genos apart in the sky.
It's so anime that she, like, to demonstrate her power, she slashes a building in half.
Yeah.
Like, now I'm super powered. Like, it feels very much like every anime show I've seen.
In the very lackadaisical way that Saitama dodges that slash, he just sort of just, I don't want to move away from the mic, but he just sort of just, like, moves to the side, like, very, very slowly, or it's without really thinking about it.
Yeah, in general, I love the way they draw Saitama. It's just like, well, he's
not impressed.
He's the greatest, well, yeah, but also he's the greatest fighter, but not in a flashy way. Like, he never does, he rarely strikes a cool pose, so it makes it even more like boring when he just wins, or at least like boring looking. It's really funny in delivery,
because think of Saitama as a person, he's fundamentally just not cool, honestly.
No, he's a boring guy.
Like, he doesn't,
he very
like,
boring.
Like, he just can't be cool. He has the most powerful, you know, superpowers in the world, and he just can't be cool still.
Yeah.
So the Mosquito Girl basically tears the cyborg up until he's nothing but a head and a torso. And he's about to launch his self-destruct core when One Punch Man appears and just slaps the Mosquito Girl, and then she instantly explodes into blood on the side of a building.
That's right.
Just like slap, and then that's just like over. It's over.
That's right. That blood on his building later in the episode is just her.
Yeah.
Like, that's, but that, according to the trivia I read, that's the only person he beats with a slap. All the rest are punches.
It's like he's killing her like he would kill a mosquito.
Yeah. I mean, that's the joke, I think.
Yeah.
And apologies in advance for going into super nerd mode, but people have pointed out that it looks like she actually gets flung away, not necessarily killed. Like, that blood splatter is hers, but they point out in the episode, like, ooh, like, maybe she'll come back. She's not coming back.
She hasn't come back.
Maybe they did want to leave it like, you know what? Saitama shouldn't kill a female villain this early, even one who is, like, genocidal like her.
But still looks like she died, so I'm not sure if it has that much of an effect.
She explodes in like just a mess of blood. She has to be dead.
Well, she had a lot of blood to spare.
That's true. You know? She had a butt full of blood.
But and then he does it while just naked and looking lame, and then he also makes like a lame dad joke about like mosquitoes suck.
Yeah. But it's like, was she bugging you or whatever? Yeah.
The thing is, as we'll find out soon, Genos has absolutely no sense of humor whatsoever. So even if he had a good joke, he wasn't getting any audience.
It's very much like, and this could be what they're going for, he belongs in a different series where someone like him would be taken seriously, but he shows up at Saitama's house wanting to be trained and calling him sensei, and he's like, ah, whatever, come in, don't call me that.
I was just gonna say, yeah, he's the star of his own series trapped in someone else's series, and he only lives to suffer. It's like hell. He's trapped in hell, Genesis.
Yeah, and he wants to know if Saitama's baldness is like a shield. He's like, no, I'm just bald. He's very self-conscious about, so all of this working out for some reason made him go bald, and everyone's surprised that he's bald and so young.
Yeah, because Saitama's 25, and apparently when you run the 10 kilometers a day and 100 push-ups and all that stuff, you just go bald. When he describes his training regimen, he goes, you have to work out until you go bald. So it's his assumption that it just happens when you do that.
Mm-hmm. It seems like a freak accident to me.
And it's an amazing just comedic idea of a true hero has to learn under a bad teacher who's better than him in every way. He's just trapped of like, well, so many great scenes of him saying like, well, what about this? He's like, I don't know. Yeah. I just did this.
And one of the best scenes is in a future episode where Genos is asking for his masterly advice. He goes, oh, I have to come up with something. You know, like, Genos, you're a cyborg, so why don't you try for number one? He's like, I will, master. He's like, thank God I got past that. Like, I feel like I'm ripping him off here.
That is great. And I think at one point during this conversation, Saitama is like, what's your problem? He's like, oh, my problem is this. And he goes into his epic origin story. And so they're really paying for the animation that they spent earlier, in which as Genos is going over his really long and tortured backstory, which doesn't matter and does not come up again, I don't think, the camera is just panning over scenery and panning over things inside the apartment. And there's like a bug on its back that eventually crawls away, and then eventually Saitama's like, no, 20 words or less for your backstory. Yeah. Shut up.
Well, there's some great moments where Saitama tries to interrupt him, like, then it just...
Yeah.
And also,
he thinks it's over at some point, like, okay, yeah. No, it's not over.
And then also, you can see him, he's sick, they're both sat cross-legged, and Saitama, then you can see his right knee just start going up and down, like, come on.
I mean, the conversation starts with, like, what's your problem? It's like, oh, you want to hear? And then, he launches
it. It is amazing. It is a great superhero origin. It's very similar to many, like Astro Boy / Tetsuan Adam. Like that, it's just a cyborg or robot built by a good guy to then fight evil guys. I mean, Mega Man ripped the shit out of that off.
Yeah.
Like, it's so similar.
But I enjoy how, again, he's trapped in a different series, in the wrong series, but I love how ready he is to launch into his backstory and everything that made him who he is, and it doesn't make any sense.
It's like, well, because he knows that in a normal series, this is when you explain your backstory to the readers so they can all know. And Genos is also a great character because you need a new person to ask questions of Saitama and have Saitama explain things to him, and they can learn stuff together. So it's a real good audience in as well.
Yeah, and he's a sweet, innocent character in this world.
Just a 19-year-old cyborg just trying to make it in this world.
I forget how they communicate this scene in the manga, but I believe it's like a one-page panel where he is just surrounded by words and not happy about it. Yeah. But it's just like a ton of words around him. But I like how they do that in the anime by using your standard anime shortcuts of panning over scenery while people are talking that we've seen in Evangelion so often.
I'm sorry. I noticed during his monologue too that there's a shot of the sale, the ad for the sale that he gets obsessed with in the next episode too.
I did not catch that. That's good foreshadowing. this time when I was watching it for this, I paid close attention to what Genos was saying, and he does actually just repeat himself. So I kind of sympathize with Saitama. I'm like, you're just okay. I heard about Dr. Kuseno. Okay, yeah. You got beat up. I got it.
And we do see that doctor later, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
You do see him briefly in the anime.
I thought so. So Saitama does agree to train him, and we get a brief cutaway to things that are setting up the next episode, in that they want the creator of Mosquito Girl, the master of Mosquito Girl, is like, oh, I want you to come to my house of evolution. And that's what's going to be happening after this episode.
Basically the High Evolutionary from Marvel Comics, if you know that character. The big purple guy who makes the Knights of Wondergore, the original furries.
I do not, but now I do. So this before, like as soon as he agrees to train Genos, this mantis guy breaks in through his wall, then he just punches him in the head. His head explodes.
Yeah, and the mantis guy comes and goes, my name is, huh? And he just, head explodes.
Yeah.
I did see the page from the manga of that too, and it's just as funny. It's a big, great, like almost full page splash of him going, hey, my name is, and then the next panel is his head exploding in a punch.
He has no time for this anime bullshit everybody is so into and wants to do.
Well, he's just like, hey, pay for my ceiling. That's what he just says. Like, what the fuck?
And then we cut to like the other two henchmen. It's like a slug and a frog, and they're like, "I'm not picking him up anymore. Did something happen to him?" And that's when One Punch Man, I believe, that's when he hits the ground.
Well, it's Genos thinks he's going to fight them on the outside, and One Punch Man already beat them up and buried them underground.
He didn't kill them, but they're both like stuck in the ground.
Yeah. It's nice. Saitama only kills other people have to kill him. If you're kind of a lesser dude, he's like, all right, I won't kill you.
He actually kind of, I guess it's true he didn't kill those two guys, but he kind of just kills anyone who's a monster, actually. He doesn't kill humans, I'll say that.
Like, yeah.
He's very merciful for humans, but monsters, he will just murder the shit out of them.
He does say, can't you just come through the door?
Yes.
I mean, not to spoil something that happens later this episode, but he does kill that one guy who tries to run away, you know?
Oh, yeah.
He has no mercy for that. He says, no, I'm just going to murder the crap out of you.
Well, they're full of guts. Fun guts. So many different colors and sizes.
I like the guy that's Genos is fighting. It just looks like a knight at first. When you know the reveal later, you can then, when I rewatched it, I was like, oh, he has such primate style movements too. He is animated very specifically to move like a gorilla, even if the viewer doesn't yet know he is a gorilla man.
Well, he does introduce himself as Armored Gorilla.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, but he doesn't look like a gorilla until you see what's actually under him.
What you say is still true, because I didn't expect him to be an actual gorilla. Cyborg armor or whatever.
So yeah, the mole man pulls one. There's a mole man, by the way.
Oh yes,
and he appears and he pulls One Punch Man underground. He's sort of stuck in the ground like bamboo, he says, and it's very comfortable, I guess.
Yeah, I like that he also says, like, wait, what's happening behind me? I can't see. Like, what's going on?
He's just so completely unconcerned, though. I think it's kind of what they're really showing here. Is like, he does not care at all. Like,
no change in his face at all.
Yawn, you know, whatever.
so Genos can't get a hit in on the cyborg. He's too powerful, and so One Punch Man just like. Everybody thinks he's stuck in the ground, he's dead, like the gorilla's gonna kill him, but he just like casually walks out of the hole and he's like, wait, I got dirt in my special place, and they just wait for him to clean his belt.
Yeah.
He's just standing there flipping his belt around and cleaning the dirt out of it.
Oh, well, the Beast King dude, who's like the most powerful of the group, is like, oh, I'm about to stab you in the eyes.
There's a giant lion guy here too named Beast King.
Yes.
Again, we there's like eight monsters in this episode.
It's a really great visual when he walks out, like the animation visual. He just walks out and the ground dragon dude, whatever, who put him down there, like freaks out, and he's just very casual, like, oh man, oh, I got stuff here. Like, Beast King's like, are you done yet? Are you done shaking out your special place yet?
He's like, almost
there. But it's just great how, I guess, I didn't even think about this, but I guess Saitama is just absolutely convinced that he is, in fact, invincible. Like, he's not one bit worried that, like, maybe this time I won't be invincible. Like,
Saitama,
already convinced, like, yeah, no, I got it.
By this, I mean, the first episode, before Genos arrives, it's all about just how bored he is. He's just like, I'm waiting for someone to challenge me. There's no human who can, there's nothing that can. I am truly invincible. And so, at this point, he's not smug about it. He doesn't have a high opinion of himself, but he is just like, oh god, this is so boring. Like, in a couple episodes when he faces a guy who had got this fancy new power armor and he beats him again in one punch, he's like, man, I had high hopes for that power armor. Yeah, well.
So, yes, the Beast... is the lion guy named Beastmaster?
Beast King.
Beast King. So, he's got some cool slashing attacks, but One Punch Man just, like, kind of dorkily dodges through all of them and then explodes him with a bunch of punches, of course. Mm-hmm. And,
which he calls, like, consecutive normal punches.
he still does the attack calling, but, yeah, all his attack names are super boring.
Yeah, and every dodge he does is just also very boring. Like, arms down, just like...
Face all deadpan, just, okay. Yeah, I'm doing this again.
And the mole guy is like, I have to get the fuck out of here. And there's a great first-person sequence in which we're watching him dig through the ground from his perspective, but then Saitama's face appears. He's like, found you. And I don't think we see what happens to the mole guy.
No, he gets flung out. He gets flung out and hits the building, I think.
Yeah, it really reminded me of the hi guy moment. The critic of just... or there's another great moment in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 3 where the dog character Iggy is facing this killer hawk named Pet Shop or Pet Shop Boys, and Iggy digs down to the ground like, well, this bird's not finding me here, and then he runs into the bird. He's like, what the fuck? The bird's underground. Except this is delivered even funnier because of just the
spooky
blank
voice.
Look on
it's actually almost like a creepy thing where he's like, found you.
Yeah, that's true. He's playing hide and seek.
This episode does wrap up with, Armored Gorilla is defeated, but he's like, I'm only the second most powerful. Wait until you see the first most powerful guy, and Saitama shows up holding his eyeball. all. Yeah. And that was the Beast King. So he drops the act completely. He drops the robot voice. He's just like, please don't kill me.
He's like, oh man, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I want to jump with that for a second too, because I feel like it's a very, I'm generalizing again, which is always a danger on the internet, but it's a very common trope in this is sort of like, you know, anime action shows where they have like a big ranking system. Like Bleach had a whole arc where the guys had their, you know, their ranking tattooed on them. So they're like, I am the fifth most powerful. I'm the third most powerful.
And in this show, there are like letter grades, but also numbers too, I think.
Yeah.
So they're very, I mean, it's very much about the bureaucracy of being a hero and Saitama trying to rise through the ranks of this hero society.
In a lot of comics, it's not, if they don't have a specific like ranking or number attached to them, they will have explicit statements of like, boy, I wish I was as strong as this guy. You're facing the guy who's even stronger than me next. Like they have to be pretty direct when a series like, say, Dragon Ball, Yu Yu Hakusho, all those types are based on fighting. You need to be obvious with saying, like, well, this person's stronger than me, so get ready for a cooler fight later.
But I like how Saitama just blows that up, though, because, again, that's such a common thing, like, or in One Piece even, my own beloved One Piece, there's two different arcs where they explicitly point out, like, okay, here's the ranking of the villain's power levels, like, that you know exactly how powerful they are relative to each other. So for Saitama, none of that means anything, because another anime would be like, oh, you beat me, but you'll never beat this next guy, and then they usually get their ass kicked by the next guy, and then they power up and blah blah blah.
He doesn't care about the anime fighting math.
Yeah, it doesn't matter at all because he just blows everyone up. It doesn't matter.
Well, and from a writing standpoint, that's actually bad writing to be like, well, the other guy's stronger than me. And he's like, well, I killed the other guy in the previous scene, so you're not going to see that. You didn't even know this guy was stronger than you before we killed him off. So that is poor storytelling intentionally. Which that's what in general that's what One Punch Man is all about. How can you intentionally tell a story about an unbeatable hero and make it at all dramatically interesting or fun?
The show feels like sort of a dare where instead of the improv yes and, it's just no. It's like, well, he's going to fight this guy for a while. No, he's dead already. Yeah. But then this is going to happen, right? No, that guy's killed too. It's like, well, what's going to happen next? So,
well, and Genos and the other heroes are how they open up themselves to, oh yeah, we can tell these stories with people who are beatable. Like Genos is quite beatable, indestructible.
Actually, when I watch this episode again, I'm like, oh yeah, Genos wins a fight. Like that happened.
Yeah, that's true.
That's how often he gets his ass kicked.
But even that triumph is off screen. You only see it afterwards. And I also love the design on his like hand cannon. It's very Iron Man, but it's really cool.
Yeah, the hand cannons are great. All the explosions around Genos are great. I love all of his powers. But this is the end of this episode. So there's a little tease for the next episode in which the House of Evolution guy shows up, and there's like a lot of him there in the scene, and he's waiting for Saitama to show up, and that will happen in the future in this season. But I guess to do our final thoughts, to talk about this series in general, it's great. I mean, I shouldn't have to sell you on this by this point, but it's very findable, and I think it's very, like, once you watch the first episode, you'll know what the show is, and you'll know if you'll like it or not, because it follows a very sort of predictable formula, but they do so much with it. It's so impressive for a premise this limited to get this much mileage out of it. 17 manga volumes and a second season. I really want to see what they're going to adapt for the second season. Dave, you're the special guest. Like, what are your final thoughts on this episode, and what are your hopes for the second season of One Punch Man?
So, the best I can put it is, I remember when I first watched it, I was absolutely loved it. I marathoned through it, and then I went to show it to my friend. I'm like, oh, hey, you got to watch it. It's so great. It's about this guy who never loses. He goes, that sounds fucking boring. But eventually he watched it and he thought it was great too. And that's kind of like the bottom line there, is that it doesn't, you know, that premise doesn't sound that great, but yeah, it is absolutely an amazing show. I think, to me, it's a show that sort of parodies and subverts a lot of like typical Shonen Jump, you know, manga, anime type stuff. But sort of like from a loving point of view, this is not like these are all dumb and you shouldn't watch them kind of parody. It's like this is fun. This is poke fun at this.
It's yeah,
well, and full of references that only super fans of shonen manga would get too. So it's appealing to the dorks who love this stuff, but also can laugh at it.
Yeah, I feel like it's a sort of a loving deconstruction, because ultimately, if you read Dragon Ball or One Piece or whatever, like, Luffy is One Punch Man. Goku is One Punch Man. They're like, they can never be beaten. They always end the fight with like one big attack. I mean, there's more going on, and they have weaknesses and stuff, but it is very much like, no, this is the hero. They can never die. They're always the strongest.
Well, and that's the tightrope they walk in superhero comics too. Just like, you know that Spider-Man's not going to truly ever lose because the comic went in. Same with Batman. So they have to lose and then come back, or they have to really struggle and then win. But at the end of the day, if you're looking at their win record, it would be the same as One Punch Man.
And the writer of this this manga and webcomic, they're like, hey, reader, you know the hero can never die, so that's just going to be part of the show. Of course he can never die. He's not worried about it.
No way.
Yeah.
Now, the last thing I'd say about this is if you're not into anime that much, this is a good gateway show, too, because if you're a big fan of American comics and superhero comics specifically, you'll love its play on it as well. And just the colors, the action, just it delivers on. I'm so used to comedy shows, like Adult Swim shows are funny, but they don't have better action animation than an action show. But this comedic show is animated better than any regular action show of its era.
Yeah, seriously, some of the best like 21st century animation I've seen on TV is on One Punch Man. This comedy action show.
That's goofy and has no real point to it. Yeah. In the end.
Well, we talked a little bit too, but also I would highly recommend the manga as well.
Yeah, the manga is great.
But yeah, so you know, watch the anime because the anime is great, and then pick it up where the manga leaves off as well, or where the anime leaves off as well. As you get deeper into it, there is actually a bit of depth to it attached to like Saitama's character, and this is I know it's a really weird comparison to make, but there is a kind of like a Dr. Manhattan from Watchmen kind of vibe. In the sense that, like, I know it's a really weird.
No, I totally see it.
But there is that sort of, like, detachment from humanity he gets because, like, you know, you just can't relate to these people anymore because, like, I'm not like you anymore. Like,
I don't and their problems.
Yes. I mean, that's a danger they bring up explicitly with, actually, the House Evolution guy. He mentions in a later or something that I think it's him. They mention, like, you know, one of the things that Saitama lost was not just his hair, which is kind of a joke, but also, like, a sense of humanity because. Yeah, he's not like other people anymore.
Or for you less literate people, Rick from Rick and Morty. Right? As Henry was drinking, I thought I would have killed him with that.
Almost. Okay.
You almost got him.
But yeah, thank you for joining us for One Punch Man. Let's talk to Dave. Dave, you paid so much money for this episode. You're giving us money, helping us live.
Thank you.
Do you have something to plug? Number one, thank you. Number two, do you have anything to plug, like a Twitter, anything you're working on? Or
I actually don't, but if you don't mind, I'd like to plug something something else I follow.
Oh, sure.
There's a Let's Play channel called Press Buttons and Talk. It's actually done by, so the names are Alex, Sungwon, and Anne Marine. That's Sungwon Cho, as in Pro ZD.
Oh, yeah. Man. Okay, yeah. Okay, funniest guy on the internet, probably.
Yeah, I'm also a patron of them. They do a great Let's Play channel. It's very lighthearted, goofy stuff. What's great also is they play anything you send in, so they play a lot of weird oddball stuff, like Okage, which is like some random PS2 RPG. They played Wheel of Fortune. They'll play garbage games. If you send it in, they'll play it. So
excellent.
But they always find a way to make it just really funny and entertaining to watch.
And what's it called again?
Press Buttons and Talk.
Press Buttons and Talk. Awesome. Okay. Well, I'm sure they will thank you. But yeah, thanks so much for coming, Dave. Another great choice. Hopefully, we'll see you again with another recording. That'd be awesome.
Oh, yeah.
But as for us, this entire network is supported by the Talking Simpsons Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, and give at the $5 level, you'll get every episode a week ahead of time and ad-free. You could be listening to our first episode breakdown of Matt Groening's new series, Disenchantment. That's live on the Patreon right now if you're listening to this on the free feed. And you'll also get every episode of Talking Simpsons a week ahead of time and ad-free. And also all of our limited exclusive series like Talking Futurama, Talking Critics, so many interviews, so many specials, so many just like let's do a thing about this and then we'll put it on the Patreon. No one else will see it. So Henry, what is going on the Patreon right now that people should definitely check out if they join the $5 level?
Well, one I want to point people to, because we kind of touched on it a little bit, was Bob's trip to Japan and his love of One Piece. We did a whole One Piece exclusive on the Patreon that you can hear Bob talk about his time in Tokyo.
And our pal Maddie's on that too.
Yeah, that was she's also a big manga fan. She's great.
Got me into my crippling One Piece addiction.
Oh, God. And also, we just had a brand new Simpsons interview at the time you're listening to this. Dan McGrath, he doesn't do a lot of interviews. He's and we got to hear some really cool stuff about his time working on seasons 4, 5, and 6 of The Simpsons, as well as working on Mission Hill, King of the Hill, and Gravity Falls. He tells us all. It was really cool. So check that out.
So many stories that I've never heard. I thought I've heard all the Simpsons stories. So, yes, please go to patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. If you can only give $1 a month, we'd appreciate that too. Anything helps us live our life and live our lives, rather. There's more than one life in this room.
We live the same life.
Exactly. Our life is identical.
Very intertwined.
It helps us live our lives and it helps us make great stuff. We want to make more great stuff for you. So please check it out. And as for me, I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts. You can find that at Retronauts.com or look up Retronauts in your podcast machine. It's a classic gaming podcast. We've been doing this since 2006. I recommend you go back in time, find a topic that you like, and download the corresponding episode. I think you'll like the show. If you do, please subscribe. And Henry, how about you?
I'm HENREYG on Twitter. Whenever cool stuff goes up on both What a Cartoon or Talking Simpsons, you'll learn about it first from me or from Bob. Follow us both. But that's where the news happens, so check me out there.
So yes, thanks again, Dave, so much for coming and donating thanks and unlocking this. And thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week with Disenchantment Episode 1. See you then.